Oh, hello. My name is Anita K. Newman, and my favorite thing is singing with children, teaching children through music.
Welcome to the Finding Favorites podcast, where we explore your favorite things without using an algorithm. Here's your host, Leah Jones.
Hello, and welcome to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones. It is Easter Sunday, also the second full day of Passover. Also, it is somewhere in the month of Ramadan. So there are a lot of holidays converging this weekend, which is really special. I hope no matter which holiday you celebrate, you found meaning in it, you had a nice meal, or you had a meaningful fast. This week on the podcast, we are talking to Anita K. Newman. She is an author, a retired teacher. A retired teacher who I want to find some of her former students. I want to find the kids in Boston who grew up singing her dinosaur musicals and didn't know until they were an adult that everyone didn't sing dinosaur musicals. You'll hear more about it in the podcast, but I don't know if any of you knew a Ms. Newman teaching in Worcester, Massachusetts. Put them in touch. I want these stories. So it was a fun conversation with Anita. Her children's book comes out at the end of May, and you'll hear more about that. I've started physical therapy a couple weeks ago, so I'm trying to get stronger as I continue to recover from chemotherapy and radiation. My doctor said I'm not bouncing back like she expected. So I also have more tests lined up to make sure there's nothing else hidden and wrong with me, that it's just a winter of, the winter of my recliner, might be what happened to my core muscles combined with the chemotherapy. But I'm doing physical therapy. I'm trying to get stronger. I'm trying to regain my strength, mostly. And other than that, I got my second booster. As someone who is a cancer patient, I was eligible for a second booster. So I have now had 4 Pfizer shots. Really didn't have any side effects from this 4th one. Had kind of a lump in my arm, but that was about it. So if you are eligible for a booster, I don't know, go for it. Get it. I'm not a medical doctor. I can't really give you advice on it, but if you can, if you're eligible, I definitely suggest it. And with that, you know, wear your mask, wash your hands, and keep enjoying your favorite things. Hello and welcome to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones, and this is the podcast where we get recommendations without using an algorithm. I am so pleased this evening to be joined by author Anita K. Newman. She has taught in Massachusetts and Rome, kindergarten, first grade, bilingual. She is an opera singer. She has a master's degree in school psychology. She's also a labor law attorney. She has done it all, and this spring is celebrating the publication of the book Clark the Colorblind Chameleon, which has I'm very excited to learn more about. Anita, how are you doing this evening?
I am doing really well for my first podcast.
Yay! How exciting.
Yes.
And is this also your first book launch?
It is. It is.
Great.
I have many books, but this is the first one I decided to do.
Yeah. We're going to talk more later about teaching kids to sing, but I'm curious, like just right off the bat, how did this book come into the world?
Actually, I just got the idea quite a few years ago and I never acted on it. Mm-hmm. And when I teach kindergarten or first grade, I read to the children a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Break. and also getting them to be able to focus and get their imaginations working, because they're used to videos, they're used to playing games. Mm-hmm. I decided this was probably the first book I really would like to do. And they had none. I've read little chameleon books to them, but none of them hit on this particular issue. So I said, there's an open place there. I'm going to write a book about it.
Yeah. And it's so interesting. Just my cats have the zoomies.
Yeah.
And they think I'm home base. So if I get attacked, that's what happened. They're using me as home base. So from the title of the book and the description I read, it seems like this is an opportunity to talk to kids about how people see the world differently, how bodies can be different, but put in the world of chameleons who change colors. So for a chameleon to be colorblind, does that mean, does he struggle to like match his surroundings like the other chameleons do?
Yes. He can only see grays, shade of grays.
Mm.
And they don't really make fun of him. They just don't understand it, because I didn't want to put that in the book.
Right.
But he also has to worry about it. It's a protection. It's camouflage. And he has to worry about a predator coming mm-hmm. along. He can't hide.
Yeah.
So it's also dangerous.
Yeah.
It's being different. It's dangerous for him. So he has to learn what to do.
Mm.
And in the book, he goes to the wise chameleon who tells him, I think that's probably a school psychologist, but mm-hmm. tells him, she tests him. So she said, you can change colors. You just don't see them. So you have to match shades of gray, which is extremely difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to practice and practice and practice to get the right color. And he has a difficult time and he gets discouraged. So it also shows kids that things don't come immediately. You have to fight for them. You have to work for them. It's and have grit, stick mm-hmm. to it. And eventually he does learn how to match. And when he does, he can do many different colors. He can do mm-hmm. things other chameleons cannot. So he becomes famous for these. Being able to do rainbow and what have you. Mm-hmm. So,
because he also doesn't know the limitations.
Yes. So.
How exciting.
Premise of the book.
And were you assigned the illustrator, or is this someone that you knew?
It's someone I knew, and I paid her.
Okay.
I paid her to do it because I love the way she does the artwork.
Yeah. It has a really beautiful, like, watercolors that were then paper cuts almost.
It is. It's like a collage.
Mm-hmm.
Collage work. And she did a really good job with what he sees. Like, she showed a whole page, two pages that open up of grays.
Mm.
What he sees. So children can understand it.
Yeah.
And then he's trying to change the colors. She's very, I wrote, he turned greeny gray, turned, you know, and eventually finally makes it. And she's able to do that. She made beautiful paintings of that too.
How wonderful. Is this someone local to you that you can do a launch celebration with?
No. Pretty far away. I think she's in Chicago.
Okay.
I've never actually met her. I've met her through talking to her over, you know, the phone and what have you. Never actually met her person to person.
Yeah.
But I've seen her work.
That's wonderful. Great. And how can people get the book?
Well, it's coming out May 24th.
Okay.
I do know it's at Target and Walmart and Barnes & Noble and Amazon.
Wonderful.
And that's all I know.
Yeah. that's so exciting, like right before Memorial Day, go into the summer with your, you know, end the school year with your new book out.
Yes, they were hoping, you know, to get librarians are deciding what books to buy for the school,
right?
You know, so we're hoping to get those librarians to see the book and read it.
Yes.
So it is exciting.
Yeah. Now that you have this first one coming out in the world in a couple months, are there other chameleon stories or other stories that are starting to pop up for you?
Well, with him, yes, because I decided to write a sequel because I've noticed and take my time. Because yeah. I've noticed that that when a book does well, and I'm hoping it will, yes. may or not, they want sequels quickly. And unfortunately, I've noticed as a teacher, it'll come out and I want it and I'll buy it. And it's nowhere near as good as the original.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of thrown together, and it always makes me kind of sad.
Yeah.
So I've been taking my time with this particular sequel.
Yeah. And cool. I imagine it's also it's because she's not doing like digital. Well, maybe she's doing digital art, but it feels very like it's not quick. It's not a quick turn art that you're partnering with artist.
Yes. So I haven't even sent that to her yet. I'd have to have some kind of agreement.
Yeah. Before,
you know, do that.
Yeah.
But you know, it's called Clark Gets the Blues. Which gives you... little children get the blues sometimes too. Yeah. They don't understand it.
Yeah. And how did you get? I mean, you have such a fascinating bio that I briefly touched on a few things in it, but where in the course of your career you have been the lead soprano, and is it Worcester, Maine?
Worcester.
Massachusetts. I didn't say Worcester. I'm learning. So you are an opera singer, you're an attorney, you're a school psychologist, you teach the littles. Tell me a little, I'm just so curious how you have such a wonderful path just in this short little bio. Tell me a little bit about how your career came to be.
I started teaching, and I started teaching bilingual.
Mm-hmm.
I did not enjoy because they stuck all the bilingual kids together and it didn't matter where they were in learning, and it made it very, very difficult.
Or even what their first language was.
Right. Well, no, this was all Spanish English.
It was all Spanish. Okay.
Because I grew up in Venezuela. My dad was in oil.
Okay.
So, and we went all over, but I was there for 10 years.
Okay.
Second grade to junior in high school. So I got a lot of interesting, experiences.
Yeah.
That maybe you wouldn't get here. But I then went into music. I taught music first.
Okay.
And I loved the little kids. I think I am a little kid in many ways.
Yeah.
And I relate to them. So when we finally had some openings, I moved to kindergarten. And then I did some first grade and then back to kindergarten.
Wonderful.
I don't know. I've always felt, I always wanted to be learning something.
Mm-hmm.
So I got the master's was in school psychology. And
yeah.
I got certified. And then the singing always went on, and they started an opera company. So I auditioned and became the lead soprano. And we always met at night.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that for about seven to eight years, and then it just didn't have enough money behind it.
Sure.
The arts are often not funded properly. So it kind of folded.
Yeah.
And I still taught. I always taught because I had a feeling it might. And I did not want to go all over the country singing here, there, and everywhere. Mm-hmm. I just, like, I'm a home. I like my home, and I don't want to go.
Uh-huh.
And then I after that I wanted something challenging, so I said I think I'll go to law school, and I did that at night.
Wow.
So Looking back, I don't know how I did it, but I did.
Yeah. How many years is law school when you're going at night? Is it still 3 years or does it stretch out a little bit more?
It's four.
It was four years.
But I can take courses in the summer, which a lot of people can't.
Right.
Take day courses. So I actually graduated a semester early.
Okay.
Because of that. So, and then passed bar. So that's, I just kind of move on that way.
Yeah.
The things that I'm interested in, I want to learn about.
Yeah.
That's how I did it. And I also, when I was in Rome, I wrote children's books.
Okay.
Because I taught second grade and then a combination of second and third.
Mm-hmm.
So I would read to them what I'd written and let them illustrate it sometimes.
Okay.
It's just kind of a natural progression.
Yeah.
And then I decided I'm not going to push my books till I graduate, retire. I consider that graduation.
It is also graduation.
So when I retired, then they could focus on trying to get the books published.
Yeah. How many years were you teaching in Rome?
I was there 5 years.
5 years.
Yeah.
I've been to Rome for for 24 hours. It was attached to I spent a long weekend in Assisi. I was living in London at the time and then met up with a coworker in Rome. And we just went to four or five restaurants one night. And then the next day did a running tour of kind of some highlights and stopped by the Trevi Fountain so I could throw a coin in so that I can return. I was like, okay, that's my insurance. I'll be back to Rome.
Yeah.
But when people ask you, when people are going to Rome, and maybe they're going for longer than 24 hours, what are some of the highlights that you think people should experience in Rome?
Rome, of course, you did a lot of it. It was marvelous. And I love the markets, the fresh food markets. And they had a giant flea market on Sundays. And it's blocks long. And that was my favorite place to go on Sunday. I would go down there and check everything out. They had very interesting bargains, which you don't usually get a bargain in Rome. It's very expensive. And I enjoyed it. But Rome is very difficult to live in.
Mm-hmm.
It's just difficult. I went to the bank to get money and they were having a strike. So they said, sorry, you can't come in. We're having a strike. And I'm like, I've never imagined a bank having a strike. So it's you have to get used to all that. And they close from 1 to 4.
Right.
They close right down. And then dinner's supposed to be at 8, but I eat at 6. But on the weekends and Fridays, you can enjoy that.
Yeah.
And they have opera. Of course, I sang in operettas and musicals on top there too.
Oh, how wonderful.
So it was pretty cool. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And my philosophy is anyone who speaks English is my friend until proven otherwise.
Were you collecting, is that collecting expats or is that also collecting Italian people who speak English or just anyone who spoke English?
Pretty much anyone who speaks English. I'm more than happy to talk to you and be a friend until you prove that I don't really want to be with you.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
I liked Rome, but I was also very, very glad to get back to the United States.
Yeah. Great. Now I previewed it a little bit, on this podcast, I'd love to talk to people about their favorite thing, how they found it. And you mentioned that one of your favorite things is teaching little kids music.
Yes.
And you've said that you've sung your whole life. So are you from a family of singers, or when you were growing up in Venezuela, your grown-ups realized we got to get her in the choir? How did you start your singing career?
My father loves to sing and he loves music, and he put the big records on for operas, symphonies, for us to go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you always had that music in your head at night when you went to sleep, and it permeates, I think. And I used to try to sing with the violins, because a lot of symphonies don't, you know, they don't sing.
Right.
But I would try to sing with the higher, because I had a high voice, so I would sing with them, and I always loved to sing.
Yeah.
And they had choirs that I could be in, and I started taking lessons right before I left.
Mm-hmm.
Because the voice teacher said girls' voices also changed, not as dramatically as boys, but he wanted to wait until my voice had started and to change.
Oh, wow.
He didn't want to hurt it by starting to sing. So I started at 16
with
my voice lessons.
And then did those lessons continue when you moved back to the United States?
Yes. I still take voice lessons.
Oh, wonderful.
Because it's a muscle. You got to keep it moving, and it's stretched, you know, to get the high notes and the low notes.
Yeah. When did you study music education in college, or you studied to become a teacher and singing was a side project?
I majored in vocal music.
Okay.
So I was vocal performance, and you get a degree in, and they also gave you the education, music education. So you would have a degree to teach music.
Yeah.
And then I went back to get the, I had extra courses to take to get certified.
Right.
At the time it was K through 12 music and K through 8 teaching everything.
Yeah.
As a regular classroom teacher. So now they make more distinctions, but
yeah,
at the time that's what I did. Yeah. And then I wanted school psychology to, why are these, you know, to understand the children's learning patterns. And so, you know, it really just kind of fell into place.
Yeah.
I think when you're free to do what you really want to do, you can follow your heart.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't do that. And maybe because they're too bogged down with children or whatever. I did not have children. Not because I didn't want them.
Mm-hmm. My life has taken the same path as with I'm an auntie. My goal is to be like, essentially, if I could be Aunt Mame, like she is one of my idols as far as like being an aunt and being one of the grown-ups in the lives of my nephews and of my friends' kids. So I totally get that. I started my undergrad in music education, and I played the oboe.
Okay, that's hard.
Yes. And very quickly, my freshman year, once I realized what getting a degree in oboe performance and music education really entailed, I changed my major. I realized that I didn't, once I got to school and I saw that other people were so driven to practice and sing and like truly do all of the music theory, the piano lessons, everything it takes to become a performance major in a music education, I switched to chemistry. I needed something easier.
Very different.
Very different.
A different path.
Yeah. But at the same time, honestly, music and chemistry to me are not so different, because music has so much math in it. You're constantly doing fractions.
Right.
When you're sight reading music, it's math at some level. And the way that you're turning, you're learning a whole new alphabet by learning to read music and translate that into something that you can sing or play. And chemistry just has these, if you don't know chemistry, you look at it and it's just these weird drawings of lines and letters, and it doesn't make any sense, but it's kind of, for me, the same pattern making that music can be.
Right.
Music has more heart in it than chemistry. I'll give it that.
But chemistry, I mean, I took chemistry, but wasn't my favorite thing, although my father had to, you know, he helped me with chemistry, but he also helped me with music theory. Mm-hmm. Telling me they are very much alike, because I took music theory as a senior in high school.
Oh, wow.
So, and it was like a foreign language. It was just not making sense. And he helped me. Mm-hmm. After the first 9 weeks, he said, you're on your own. I don't have any more. I don't know. But I had it clicked in by then. So,
yeah. It was okay. I don't know. It did not click in for me. I love the paper. I love that notebook of blank, just blank music paper of like just the staffs. There's something really wonderful about going into a classroom with that. Is that like, this is what you're taking notes on. I remember that, but I don't remember. I remember very little else that I learned. So.
Yeah.
Because it also says in your bio that you wrote musicals for some for the kids.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So when you're faced with a group of kindergarten K1 kindergarten first grade littles, when you're meeting with littles who have never been in a music class before, how do you do it?
They're my students, so. Mm-hmm. I start from day one, and you teach through using music. You teach the days of the week with music. You teach numbers with music. You can do anything if you can write a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Music, or just take a melody and put what you want to in it.
Yeah.
And so I find that they learn well if I'm teaching something and get them to sing a song that has it in it.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So I'm always singing with them. I was always reading books to them and always singing with them. And the musicals, it's very easy. If you know music theory and you've got some of it,
mm-hmm.
pretty simple. You know their range is not going to be huge.
Right.
And you have to have a chorus. And I always like to have choruses that have some kind of movement or clap in or snaps or something that's bouncy, because that's what they'll remember and love. And then whatever else I'm doing, the verses are usually the science of whatever we're doing.
Okay.
And I like looking up and making sure I've got the facts correct.
Yeah.
And then I write the little poem first, and then the music just seems to come.
Mm-hmm.
It's very simple because I don't play the piano well.
Okay. So
it better be simple. And I played for them, and I like to take a folk song, start with that, and then add my own, as an introduction.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, because they would sing up to 17 songs in a musical.
Wow.
And they learn it so fast. They learn it. It's amazing how quickly they learn it.
Yeah.
And little kids, they can act, but they have difficulty giving lines.
Mm-hmm.
The timing. So I usually have everyone gets to be a narrator for one section a little bit.
Okay.
So they'll give you the science, a little bit of the science. And for example, I did a dinosaur musical,
mm-hmm.
called The Fossil Egg. And they go back in time and they're trying to figure out what kind of thing. It hatches, but they don't know what it is.
Uh-huh.
And so the different dinosaurs come, and usually it's however many kids you have. You have three or four of each kind of dinosaur, and they have their little song about the kind of dinosaur.
Yeah.
And so usually I have a dance to go with it. It's quite enjoyable to do for me.
Oh, that's so fun.
And of course they love it.
Mm-hmm.
And they love the rehearsals because, oh, we're not doing reading today. You know? But
and then you've tricked them. They've learned science at the end of their musical.
Yes. So, and it usually turns out really well, and the parents love it. I love it. They love it.
Yeah.
It's a win-win situation.
Yeah. I bet you're and then would you use the musicals from year to year?
Usually I would change them because I feel it's like cheating.
Okay.
I also like to use, I always say, I'm going to use my brain now. I'm going to start writing different songs. Mm-hmm. And, but I did several dinosaur ones, just slightly different.
Yeah.
And I might use some of the songs that I had before.
Yeah.
Cheating.
I don't think it's cheating to use the same lesson plan twice. I'll check.
It is really.
Because I bet there are, you must have students who grew up assuming everyone sang this musical about dinosaurs.
Right.
And they've taught their kids these songs about dinosaurs. And then they're sitting around a dinner table with other parents of other first graders. And they're like, wait, what do you mean you don't know the dinosaur musical? But we, like, I am certain you've had students that have, like, come to that realization as an adult that, like, your music wasn't what everybody did. And that's so special.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I do have some. They videoed them.
Yeah.
You know, in the big one that you stick in. Right. And I need to get them put on CDs, but it's kind of fun to watch. And
yeah.
Remember, and if I ever sit down and write everything out, I can use the video to show whoever I'm trying to get to buy it what it looks like when you do it.
Yeah. That is so fun. It's so, because I have really fond memories. Our elementary music teacher was Mrs. Connor. If you didn't have perfect pitch, she still got everyone to sing on key. Mm-hmm. And I mean, really set us, there's no way I would have gotten to even trying to be a music major without having had come from an elementary school with music kind of everywhere.
Yes, I think you get an early start.
Mm-hmm.
You realize you love it. And then you picked your instrument.
Yeah. Well, I started on saxophone in fifth grade. With our elementary school started kids in fourth grade, you could play trumpet or baritone. Mm-hmm. That's all you were allowed to play in fourth grade.
Okay.
And then in fifth grade, you got to pick your instrument from the whole band or orchestra. And I picked saxophone. And then my sophomore year of high school, so I played saxophone. My twin sister played flute. Our sophomore year of high school, our band director came up to us and put a hand on each shoulder and said, "You girls are going to need scholarships to college. And I need an oboe player and a bassoon player."
Oh, no.
Kind of like, take your pick. These are instruments that will get you scholarships. And I need double reed players. So my sister switched to bassoon and I switched to oboe.
Wow.
So it was fun to get to do like jazz band and pep band on the saxophone and then have oboe and get to do classical music. And
so you did a lot of music.
We did a lot of music.
That's great.
Yeah. I had hoped when I first started college, because I was drum major of my high school marching band, and loved conducting.
Yes.
So I had harbored dreams of becoming the first female conductor of blank major symphony orchestra, kind of leaving room for assuming like women, lots of women would be getting into conducting, but there's no becoming a conductor without music theory, being able to play multiple instruments, you know.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of education that I did not have in me to become a conductor. But it was wonderful. It was such a, I'm so grateful for the music education I had.
Mm-hmm. And it is good for your brain.
It really
is.
Yeah.
Well, we lost music for a while. Mm-hmm. It's cut their budget for schools drastically for a while. And they never quite, as far as I know, they didn't quite get it back.
Yeah.
But, you know, vocal music in the schools, but maybe they have bands now. But for a while, they didn't have instruments.
Right.
So And that makes they don't understand when you don't give a rounded education, then you're not really educating, as far as I'm concerned. But
right. Yeah, I think people can be really short-sighted about how they all help each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that learning to sight read and being able to debate are not disconnected.
No.
Right? Yeah. That instantaneous being able to react and take in what's happening, and they just all impact each other in different ways.
Couldn't convince them for a while.
It is hard to explain sometimes to the state budget board, you know, that, right, even though I didn't get my degree in music, ultimately, it still is what formed me as a human being, right, and gave me other skills and supported other ways of learning. It is really hard to communicate, like, all the soft, the intangibles of a music education.
Right. It really, it's hard to explain.
How were you able to experience music during kind of the first couple years of COVID when performance was so limited?
My vocal coach or voice teacher, mm-hmm. we had a group that we decided we're a pod.
Okay.
And one person is an artist. She's the musician. There's someone played the violin. There's a lot of, they have a lot of talented people that were together in this group that we met all the time.
Wonderful.
And so we just decided we're going to meet anyway.
Yeah.
And we didn't wear masks because you can't sing with a mask.
Right. I mean,
very difficult. And I could continue to take voice lessons. And I sing in a barbershop quartet. And
how fun.
Chorus, which is very different than opera.
Yeah.
It's totally different. Straight voice. And they tried to do it over Zoom, the chorus. You cannot.
No, you cannot.
But they had a way of, we would record, you'd hear the other parts and you'd record your part, and then they put them all together and synced them. So, you know, when you have the different people all around singing, and then they'll one voice will come out, and
yeah,
that's what we did. We did two songs that way. So that kept me, you know, singing that particular song and then getting it videoed.
Yeah. Right. And talk about continuing to learn new skills.
Yes. Yes.
The technical side of the technical skills that we all had to learn during pre-vaccine were significant.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
I helped my synagogue run services on Zoom. And so I had to learn, like, how to set it up, how to make it go to YouTube, how to gently interrupt the rabbi and say, we can't actually hear you right now. Can you check your microphone? And, and like, how to interrupt a service or a prayer to, like, do tech, to fix the tech for people at home. It was really something else.
Yeah, but it's a learning curve. And
mm-hmm.
People, I think, are better for it in a way.
Yeah.
That learning part. I don't know about the rest of it.
Yeah.
But I was happy that I had a group of people that we met regularly, and none of us got COVID, and we all
wonderful.
Got
our- Is that chamber music? Is that kind of a pod of chamber music, or what types of music would you play when you were together?
Oh, we didn't necessarily play music together.
Okay.
We'd like have a glass of wine and have a chat. And one person was an artist, so we said, why don't you teach us art?
Fun.
So we would come on another day, and we did a lot of artwork. So,
yeah.
You know, it's just keeping us busy during that time. I kind of long for it again because I'm so busy now. I would say, gee, it would be nice just to have a few days where you have nothing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But you're never happy with what you have.
Yeah, it was a really, this podcast is a COVID hobby, was mm-hmm. that all of a sudden I had 10 hours of commuting back for starters. And then 10 hours a week. And then it was just like all those nights that I used to be out with friends or at musical, like going to Broadway shows in Chicago, or it just all came, as you know, as everyone knows, to a screeching halt. And I was like, what am I going to do with this extra time? I'm going to talk to strangers on Zoom.
Sounds like fun.
Yes. Yeah.
It's great.
So you said you started working on the book after you that retirement was when you were going to really get to work on your stories and start bringing them out into the world. I'm curious how much of this book did you work on during kind of the shutdown, or was it with the publisher before?
It was with the publisher before. In fact, it was supposed to come out and everything shut down, even the publisher.
Oh, wow.
So
you've been waiting for May 24th for quite some time.
Right, right. Long, long time.
Yeah.
I was getting really kind of annoyed, but what are you going to do?
Right.
It's like, are you... I have colors.
Right. Pick more colors. Yeah. In your retirement, are you finding ways to teach kids music, or are you enjoying other ways of making music in the world?
I don't teach children anymore.
Yeah.
Kind of left that behind. I did love it when I did it.
Mm-hmm.
But now we singing in a quartet is enjoyable for me.
Yeah.
I'm perfecting it. And then we do our own concerts. So,
mm-hmm.
And then the actual chorus, I enjoy it too.
Yeah.
So I get that part in. And then I still take voice lessons and do solos here and there.
Yeah. Are you organizing recitals with other local performers, or?
That I have not done.
Yeah.
I thought about doing it with, having my quartet sing some, then I could sing solo and maybe have another group. But I have never, I put it together.
Yeah.
I think about things and then I don't necessarily do them. Somebody else needs to do that.
Right. Well, we're putting it out into the universe through the podcast that people can catch up with you to organize a night of music.
Yeah. Yeah. Be fun.
Yeah. Is there anything about teaching music, using music to teach kids, that I haven't asked you about that if we hung up without you saying it, you would be so sad I didn't ask you?
No, not music. You've talked a lot about, you understand music, so you're able to ask really good questions.
Oh, thanks.
The one thing I would say about reading books, I love to read books to the children.
Yeah.
It takes a while. They are not, you actually have to make them sit at first.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, who wants to sit here and watch us have her read to us? And by the first end of the second month, I would say they adore it.
Yeah.
They're beginning to use their own imagination. Of course, you do show the pictures, but yes. They are, I would say, okay, we're going to do a story, and they all know where they're going, and they're all happy, So mm-hmm. It was a good break. Little kids need to move about every 15 minutes, I find.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you got to get the wiggles out.
Yeah, they have to, they're little. Mm-hmm. They need to move around.
My mom was an middle school art teacher.
Oh, bless her.
Yeah. She started with a K through 8 in Indiana license, and then taught some elementary, and then wound up in a middle school, and then got the art class. She went from like sixth grade science to like middle school art.
Other way.
She and my dad met in art school, and then, when you're starting teaching, you take what you get.
You.
So she wound up a science teacher, a science and math teacher, which gave her a lot of empathy for the kids who struggled with math because she didn't identify as a math person.
Mm-hmm.
Or she doesn't identify as a math person. But once she became an art teacher, and she would still read to the kids chapter books, and kids love being read to.
They do.
Yeah.
And it stimulates the imagination. And if you're trying to get them to paint something,
mm-hmm.
excellent way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So she still reads books. She's always still vetting books, even though she's also retired.
Yeah.
She's still constantly vetting books to that middle schooler should read. So
that's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Middle school is a tough age.
Yeah. Yes, it is. I do not miss it.
I liked being in middle school and I didn't like teaching it.
Right. I mean, I had an outstanding band teacher. So I got to even do jazz band in middle school, which was great, and great art classes. So those were two things about middle school that were good for me. But I don't need the rest of it. Well, the book, Clark, The Colorblind Chameleon, comes out May 24th.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be available Target, Walmart, Barnes & Nobles. Borders is no longer with us. And Amazon, so people can pre-order it now. Pre-orders are always helpful.
Right.
And librarians can get it ordered for their fall semester. Plenty of time to get it ordered for fall semester. Do you have a website or do you use Twitter? Is there anywhere online that you'd like people to find you?
No, I'm going to have to do that.
Okay.
That's my next project.
Yeah. As you get those set up, I will put those links in the show notes as well with the podcast.
Oh, good.
Thanks. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, Nita, it has been wonderful talking to you.
I've enjoyed talking to you.
Good luck with the book launch. It's what an exciting time. Having your first book come out and it looks so beautiful. I can't wait. I can't wait to see it.
I hope it does well.
Yes.
So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Finding Favorites with Leah Jones. Please make sure to subscribe and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Now go out and enjoy your favorite things.